Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mark Levin. We're going to be talking about his book, Men in Black. Mark, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, it's an honor, Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. It's good to have you with us again. And, of course, Mark has been on our other program, and he's done a tremendous job in writing a book about the Supreme Court and some of the incredible things that have happened, the history of the court, how we got to where we are today. So why don't you just go ahead and sort of pick up and tell our listeners about the background of the court, about the men on the court. You mentioned that some of these men really have been there incredibly. Some of them were sort of senile. They just sort of hung on, and some of them came from the Ku Klux Klan. And really, they're sort of a very unusual group of people, these men who seem to be taking over, really usurping the power of the legislature and the executive branch, and really, in many respects, ruling our nation.
All that's true, Stan. Early in our history, people might be surprised to learn, in a case called Marbury versus Madison, the Supreme Court essentially seized power from the other branches of government in what I would term a counter-revolution, in what the Jefferson termed despotism of an oligarchy. And it decided that for all purposes it would have the final say on the Constitution. And I'll explain what that means in a moment. And, of course, today the Supreme Court believes it will have all say, period, Constitution or otherwise. The notion was that the court would have a say on what is or isn't constitutional, and so would the other branches of government. But the court's job was to adjudicate, basically have a ministerial function, nothing particularly spectacular. Hard to find people early on to serve on the Supreme Court because it was so weak. And so, of course, Marbury versus Madison. And since then, we've had a number of activist justices in courts. And when they are activists, they do a lot of damage to this country. In 1856, an activist Supreme Court in Dred Scott ruled that slavery is the law of the land, even in the free territories. In 1896, an activist Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal is equal when it comes to race, but that's not what the Constitution says. In 1944, the Supreme Court upheld FDR and Earl Warren's internment of 110,000 American citizens, most of whom were Japanese, without a scintilla of evidence or constitutional support. And then in 1973, the court ruled that abortion on demand is the law of the land, regardless of what every legislature said. So whether it's slavery or segregation or due process or abortion, in my view, the court has a horrendous record. And not only in outcomes, but in how it has abused its authority and abused the Constitution.
And of course, the purpose of the Supreme Court was to have to do with the Constitution interpreting and making sure the legislation was not unconstitutional, not to modify the Constitution or to legislate itself as it saw fit. Would that be a fair statement?
That is exactly right. And you had mentioned earlier some of the people who served on the court. You know, there's only been about 120 justices. Now, keep in mind, these are imperfect human beings, and you know, they're just lawyers. You know, and some of them have been outstanding, some of them have been average, and as you point out, some of them have been senile and racist and crooks. You know, the idea that we confer so much moral and legal authority on so few people, people really whom we don't know that well, who are cloistered over there in the Supreme Court, is an amazing thing to me.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Mark Levin. We're talking about his book, Men in Black. It's a new book just out, but it really has a tremendous amount of information. And information, a lot of this I really didn't know, and I've done a lot of studying on the issue. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, I think it's so amazing to read the story about Abe Fortas, who was appointed by Lyndon Johnson, and why it was that he left the court under a cloud, and Hugo Black. And do you want to just talk about a few of those reprobates that have been around during our lifetime that have had such a profound impact voting, and yet these were certainly not men of honor?
No, Abe Fortas was appointed by LBJ, and in fact, while he was on the court, he continued to advise LBJ on political matters. But what got him in trouble was he was supplementing his salary on the court with money from a foundation that was set up by a convicted stock swindler, a guy that was jailed by the name of Lewis Wolfson. And so he never reported this, and so he had to resign from the court. I'll tell you about William O. Douglas. He's a big liberal icon. He was the longest-serving justice in American history. he had sort of a Clinton problem. He had invited a flight attendant to visit him in the Supreme Court, and she came. You know, she thought, my goodness, this will be interesting. And when she was in his office, he attempted to molest her. And there was all kind of banging and noise in the room, and she escaped his clutches and went outside the office and told the secretary that, that he demanded that they go to a motel. That's pretty bizarre behavior. We have a justice by the name of McReynolds, James McReynolds, appointed by Woodrow Wilson. Many people may not know this, but Woodrow Wilson, yes, he was president of Princeton, but he came from out of Virginia, and he was a segregationist. He appointed McReynolds to the court, and there's no official photograph for the court in 1924 because McReynolds didn't want to be photographed with the first Jewish justice, Louis Brandeis. And in fact, when Brandeis would speak, he would either leave the room or cover his face with a brief or something, and he treated the court's second Jewish justice, Benjamin Cardozo, the same way. In fact, he treated blacks the same way. We've got Hugo Black. Hugo Black was appointed by FDR, and before he was a justice, he was a senator from Alabama, and before he was a senator, he was an active member of the Ku Klux Klan, much like Robert Byrd. And not only that, he was a lawyer for some of the most brutal and vicious Klansmen, including one accused of murdering a Catholic priest.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring our other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Mark Levin. We're talking about his book, Men in Black, and there's so much history about so many of the Supreme Court justices. Hugo Black, who had been a member of the Klan, Ku Klux Klan, before he went to the Senate and then became a member of our Supreme Court, and Abe Fortas, who had to resign because he was taking money from a foundation, supplementing his income as a Supreme Court justice by taking money from a foundation that had been set up by a convicted felon, and really so many of the incredible other stories about the womanizer, William O. Douglas, one of the great liberal icons on our court. He just simply goes through them. In fact, Thurgood Marshall, I was interested in your story of Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah, Thurgood Marshall, near the latter part of his term, did not have all his faculties. I'm not saying he was senile, he just wasn't very sharp. And he would spend many days watching soap operas. In fact, he once told his friend William Brennan, one of the more liberal justices, that you can learn a lot about life from soap operas. and he was very hostile toward the Constitution and the framers. You know, how could the framers, this original intent stuff. I mean, after all, the Constitution was written by slave owners. And, of course, that is a complete misunderstanding of the Constitution. The Constitution sets principles for governing. Issues like discrimination and injustice, all these other things, these are human imperfections. The Constitution isn't imperfect. People are imperfect, which is exactly why, Stan, I say that to give so much power and to confer so much moral authority on so few people who have shown in the past that they're imperfect, in fact, more imperfect than many of us, and an institution that has been so wrong about so many critical issues in our history is wrong. And the framers never, ever intended the Supreme Court or the federal judiciary generally to have this kind of power. Not a single framer at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia spoke of the court being able to veto the other two branches of government, to veto it, number one, or to veto them willy-nilly, which is exactly what it does now.
Well, of course, the whole idea of the Constitution was it was to be a permanent document. It was to be the rules by which our government was to be run. And, of course, if you wanted to change the rules, you had to amend the Constitution. It was difficult, but it could be done. What we have is a group of men wearing black robes who are simply legislating and changing the Constitution and finding rights in the Constitution that were never granted and never even dreamed of by our founding fathers, and really eroding the very moral foundation of this once great country.
I think that's absolutely correct. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, this book was published actually out in the public starting about 4 weeks ago. But I wrote it over about a 9-month period and finished it, I believe, in October. And I have a whole section on here on how these justices are more and more relying on foreign law and foreign court decision, and how this was becoming a huge problem. And little did I expect that it would prove me so right while the book is out there. I mean, the fact is that they don't just twist the Constitution anymore. Now they're telling us brazenly that they're going to ignore the Constitution, and they're going to ignore state legislatures and Congress. And bottom line is, ignore us, the people. And they're going to look at the decisions in India and Britain and Canada and every place that doesn't matter when it comes to interpreting our Constitution. This is an extraordinarily dangerous act that the Supreme Court has committed. It's committing it more and more. And what they're basically saying is, they don't believe in the American people. They do not respect the representative branches. And the judicial system that they sit atop, with jury trials and so forth, they don't trust those either. When you look at the death penalty cases, it's very difficult to get the sentence of death. Not only do you have to prove that a capital offense has been committed beyond a reasonable doubt, then the jury has to go back and decide whether or not they're going to impose the death penalty. It doesn't do it as often as people think. Then the trial judge can reverse the jury, and then you have a decade worth of appeals. And after all that, gets to the Supreme Court, and by 5-4 decision, led by the increasingly outrageous Justice Anthony Kennedy, the court rules, you know what, we've decided this is unconstitutional, not because the Constitution says so, but because we say so.
And what about this recent decision that you cannot have the death penalty for anybody less than 18, because, well, I'm not quite sure why they came up with that decision.
No, because they just... You know,
they just felt that way.
They just felt that way, and they don't live in the real world. You know, they're in Washington now. They attend the opera. They're with the beautiful people in their little cloistered conference room, and they need to get out to L.A. and into Philly and to Detroit and see who the assassins are. The assassins are these gang members who are 16, 17 years old, and they're going to be younger now than 18 in almost every case, because the gang leaders are going to know full well that the younger the assassin, the less likely they're going to be punished.
And I think that really what we have, instead of rule by law, we have rule by man. And when you have rule by man, of course, you have no law at all. And the whole idea of our Constitution was to limit the power of government so people could be free. And what we see is an expansion of the power of government, and the power not only of government but of the judicial branch of the government. What can we do about it, Mark? That is the question. I think most people feel a frustration. They know something seriously wrong. But what can we do about it?
Well, the purpose of this book is to try, and I put in plain English, for Main Street, not Harvard Yard, the people who are getting increasingly frustrated by these decisions. By the way, decisions that include conferring benefits on illegal immigrants and conferring due process rights on the enemy and so forth. And chasing Santa Claus and Christmas trees out of the public square, was to explain, number one, this is what the court was supposed to do, and I'm not historically speaking. Number two, this is what the court is now doing. Number three, why it is constitutionally impermissible. And number four, some solutions, not easy solutions, because this is time. As for the solutions, there's really three things. Number one, in the Constitution today, Congress has the power to establish, to change the jurisdiction, to change the membership of all the lower courts, because the framers were very broad in what they said about the courts and left it to Congress to fill in the blanks. The Supreme Court, apart from certain specific powers enumerated in the Constitution and not relevant to this discussion, also must rely on its jurisdiction from Congress. Congress can determine how many members sit on the Supreme Court, or what their qualifications will be. Congress has a great deal of power over the judiciary, power it exercised early in our history, a power it refuses to exercise today for a variety of reasons, I assume one of them being that the intimidation from the elite and the establishment, academia and editorial pages, and there's a reason for that, because the radical left in this country cannot win at the ballot box, and so they can achieve their agenda through unelected, unaccountable federal judges and Supreme Court members. And so that's why I think Congress doesn't act the way it should act.
And I think that's really such an important point that you make. What is happening is, you know, it doesn't matter how the people think. It doesn't matter, you know, what the Constitution says. If you have these people on the Supreme Court, they can change the laws of our land to go along with this agenda of the radical left, in my opinion. And, you know, the people don't understand that we don't have to allow that to happen. We're a nation of law, not a nation of men. And when these people violate the law, then they are subject to the law. The law is superior to what those nine people say.
Amen to that. Now, in addition to that, I argue for two constitutional amendments. Difficult process, no question about that. But a process that needs to be seriously debated, in my view, promoted. Number one, I think these judges who are lifetime appointed need to be term limited, one term for 12 years and out. If they're going to act like politicians and legislators, they don't need to be on the court for life. There's no purpose in that. And then number two, a position I feel very strongly about, just as Congress has the power to override a presidential veto when it comes to legislation with a supermajority two-thirds vote of both houses, and the framers did that because they were concerned the president might be too powerful, and they wanted the ultimate power to remain in the hands of Congress, which is closest to the people. I believe that same power to override a Supreme Court decision should exist with Congress, two-thirds vote of both houses. I mean, after all, Why is it morally or legally more sensible for nine lawyers, in some cases five, to have the final say, because they're plucked out of obscurity and appointed to the court through this nomination process, as opposed to the rest of us? I mean, this isn't a mobocracy I'm arguing for, or tyranny of the majority. We'd be working through the same representative process that we have in every other case here. And by the way, I am loath to find this tyranny of the majority all over the place. I rarely see it in this country. In fact, I can't even come up with an example.
All right.
I see tyranny of the minority is what I see.
Well, now, one of the things that has been suggested is to use Article 3, Section 2, which allows Congress to limit what the Supreme Court can do. For instance, they could say, you will not, of course, pass any legislation or adjudicate the issue of abortion. That is a states' rights issue. How do you feel about using Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution?
I feel very strongly that Congress should use it.
All right.
And I think Congress exercising that power is far more legitimate because it is a constitutional power, as you point out, than the Supreme Court doing what it did last week, exercising power it doesn't even have.
What was the decision last week you're speaking of specifically?
This is this juvenile death penalty case.
Right.
They simply didn't have the power to do what they did, which is why they went and looked abroad and talked about law abroad. I mean, it sounded like a committee of the legislature, not a judicial enterprise there.
And what they're basically saying is, well, if this was a perfect world, this is the way that it would be, and of course the juveniles wouldn't commit crimes, and so, well, but if they do, we have to consider their age, and they're not fully mature, and all these arguments, you know, there are certain laws, and they go back to the biblical times, and you take somebody's life, you shed somebody else's blood, your blood will be shed. You know, I think that the God that wrote the Old and the New Old Testament was pretty sharp. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Mark Levin, and we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Mark Levin, his book, Men in Black. And, of course, if you have a question or comment you'd like to make, why, you know our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I don't see how we can maintain the structure of our republic here. As long as we have a situation such as we have, and, you know, the thing that's really most disturbing to me is that 7 of the current Supreme Court justices were appointed by supposedly conservative Republican administrations. That doesn't bode too well for anything changing at the present time.
Well, it's an odd combination. You have a guy like Souter on there, George Bush 41, intentionally wanted a stealth candidate, and he got one, but it turned out to be a candidate that is hard left. Nobody knew that. Nobody knew much about the guy, which was a huge mistake. You have Sandra Day O'Connor, who during the vetting process in the Reagan administration, while no strong conservative, was pretty clearly conservative, and at least said she was. She's turned out to be a huge disappointment. Anthony Kennedy is sitting in Robert Bork's seat. That was the seat he was supposed to get. And after him, Douglas Ginsburg, but they shot both of them down, and Kennedy was the third choice. He was vetted by the Reagan administration very carefully, had very good, solid credentials, and he's on the court, and he's absolutely flipped the other way. This is the problem with absolute power, Stan, as you know. When it goes to their heads, the way that Anthony Kennedy's writing now, this guy really does think he's possessed, and that's too bad. But that's why I oppose lifetime appointments at this point, because he's 68, he's been on there several years now, he's going to be on there another 15 or so many years, and if this is his thinking, he's not adjudicating, if he's going to be an advocate for a cause, or he's going to start promoting his personal policy viewpoints and imposing them on the nation, thereby undermining representative government and disenfranchising all the rest of us, guys like him just shouldn't be there forever.
Well, now, what can we do as far as the local courts, or the appellate courts, the federal courts that are out there all across this country? Can Congress step in and actually remove those judges? Can they restructure that? Can they do away with the system and start in all over again at the lower court level? How should we approach this?
Actually, Congress, technically, under the Constitution, can do all those things. It can impeach judges. That's not going to happen. They just don't do it. They can abolish certain judgeships. Without firing a judge, you just take his position away, so therefore he doesn't have a job anymore. They can break up, for instance, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which I've been pushing for. When you think about it, even the liberal U.S. Supreme Court is continually reversing the ultra-liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I think that needs to be broken up and reduce some of those slots and get rid of some of those judges. Congress has absolute power when it comes to the establishment and jurisdiction of the lower courts and most of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. With that kind of legitimate constitutional power, which it can exercise in a very rational and careful way, not for the purpose of destroying that branch of government, but rebalancing the three branches of government, it ought to exercise it. And that means that we, the people, the only way we can in our form of government, need to pressure our politicians, pressure our representatives to do something about this.
And I certainly agree with that. What do you advocate that the average individual should do at this point in time?
I think they should advocate for three things. Congress...
Hold that thought as we bring our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Mark Levin, has written a book, a great book. It's called Men in Black. Got a lot of good information in it I wasn't aware of, and I think you'll learn a great deal about this, because one of the major problems in our society today is certainly what's happening with the judicial system. Before we get to what the average individual we can do, how can people get copies of your book?
They can go to the usual places, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Costco and Sam's and BJ's have it, as do most of the chains and the local stores. There's I'm pleased to say we're up there on the New York Times bestseller list, so the book is out there and available.
All right, fine. And so the fact that you're on the bestseller list already certainly means that there are a lot of people out there who are equally concerned about what's going on. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Ordinarily, are you going to have to leave us at the half hour?
I do have to, just because I have to go pick up my son.
Well, we don't want to interfere with that. So if you've got a question out there, why, you're welcome to give us a call here in the few minutes we have left, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But let's go ahead and just point out what the individual can do right now. He's heard this. He's heard us talking about this. He's read your book, and now he's ready to do something. What's he going to do?
In my own opinion, they should tell their representatives that they want them to take accountability and responsibility seriously, that they have the power under the Constitution to limit the jurisdiction of these courts, and they ought to pick an issue or two or three and begin that process. They ought to tell them also that they want the Constitution amended, not the way the court does it, without any legitimate justification, but through the amendment process. They want to limit federal judges and the Supreme Court justices to one term for 12 years, and that's it. And that also, they want Congress itself to have the power, with a two-thirds supermajority vote, to override any Supreme Court decision. This is the only way we can bring these branches back into balance. And the American people, through their elected representatives, can have some say in the future of their country.
Otherwise, we will have the rule of man rather than the rule of law. And I certainly agree with you. And I think it's important that your book gets wide circulation, because we've got to begin to focus people's attention on how the very structure of our society has been undermined. Initially, we have the executive, the legislative, and the weakest of all branches of government was the judicial. And suddenly now they are passing laws, they are making up laws and finding laws, not because they're in the Constitution, but because this is the way that these people, these men and women, think the world ought to be, not as it is. Our founding fathers believed man was corrupt. You can never trust him with power. And we should limit the power of the federal government and deal with matters of life, liberty, and property at the state and the local level. And I agree with you totally. What do you think the chances are that we're going to be able to get the American people out of their apathy and get them to be willing to become involved in this struggle to determine whether our society will survive? Because it cannot survive if we continue going the same direction we're going.
No, I think the American people are beginning to get engaged. I think, Stan, this last Christmas holiday, where the ACLU, and I actually have this in my book, if you went on their website during Christmas, they have an entire strategy for attacking religious symbols in this country, including the Ten Commandments. I think that really ticked off a lot of people. I mean, the idea that courts are looking at whether Santa Claus and Christmas trees are allowed in the public square. The people are starting to get very irritated. They're getting annoyed over the fact that the courts are conferring benefits, welfare benefits and other benefits, education and health care benefits, on illegal immigrants. That the courts are conferring the same due process rights that you and I and your audience have under our Bill of Rights to the enemy, for God's sakes. That's never been done in our history. I look at it this way. If the President of the United States were to announce today that for all purposes he will have the final say on policy in this country, he will have the final say on what's constitutional regardless of what the Supreme Court says and regardless of what Congress does, we'd all say he's mad. We'd all say that's tyranny. Well, how is it any different when five lawyers on the Supreme Court say and do exactly the same thing?
I think that's such a wonderful point. And I hope that you'll make that point on every radio station and every radio program you do. I mean, if the president usurped that sort of authority, why, I think that would be laying the foundation for a revolution in this country. But when five Supreme Court justices do it, we say, well, we're a nation of laws. But they're violating the law.
Yeah, no, there's no reason to bow down to this kind of nonsense. I mean, the framers didn't exchange one form of tyranny for another, and they would view this as tyranny. There's no question about it. Or we can look at it another way, to put it in modern terms. The framers didn't create a modern Politburo, a committee that sits around above every other aspect of government and life and decides what our future is going to be without election and without accountability.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so very much for writing your book. I think it's a great book, and I commend you on it. God bless. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening has been Mark Levin, but Mark had to leave us here, and I knew he was going to be going. I was sort of hoping maybe he could stay with us a little longer, but now we certainly will take your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, because I think this is such a vitally important subject, and of course we're going to actually have open lines this last 30 minutes. But let me just read to you something I think is so vitally important. It was written almost 200 years ago by one of the great minds of a man who was instrumental in founding this country. His name was Thomas Jefferson. And writing about the Supreme Court, he said this, and I'm quoting from a book, one of my best books I have in my library. It was written in 1905, but basically, of course, it was taking the most important things that Thomas Jefferson had said and putting them into book form. The book is Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson, and this is what Jefferson wrote. It has long been my opinion, and I have never shrunk from its expression, that the germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the constitution of our federal judiciary. An irresponsible body for impeachment is scarcely a scarecrow, working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing his noiseless step like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states and the governments of all be consolidated into one. To this I am opposed, because when all government, domestic and foreign, in little as in great things, shall be drawn to Washington as the center of all power, it will render powerless the checks of one government on another, and will become as venal and as oppressive as the government from which we separated. And that's what it's really all about, ladies and gentlemen. Thomas Jefferson and the others certainly understood the danger that we faced with an all-powerful federal government. Well, let's go to Robert, who's calling from Denver. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate what you're doing. You're doing a great job by getting out the word and so forth. I appreciate that. Your guest was just talking about Supreme Court and the book that he wrote.
Yes.
And then you kind of touched on a subject that kind of got my antenna up, death penalty.
Right.
As you mentioned, the Supreme Court said last week, anyone under 18 can't be executed, can't be put to death. I've always been four square against the death penalty for a lot of reasons. Number one, I think it's applied along racial lines. If you have dark skin, you're very poor, you're accused of murder.
Now, hold that thought for just a minute. We're going to bring our stations on and we'll go ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest has had to leave us. Right now we have Robert calling us from Denver, and he's against the death penalty, and he's going to tell us why. But I want to put our telephone number out because we're going to have open lines this next half hour, and if Roger or anybody else wants to call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Robert, you are against the death penalty. You go ahead and tell us why you're against the death penalty. You say that you feel that this is very often applied on racial lines. In other words, if you are black, why you have more of a chance of getting the death penalty than if you're white. If you have a lot of money, why you can usually buy a good lawyer. If you're black and come from the inner city, why chances are you'll get the lawyer that's issued to you by the government. And if the lawyer is smart, he's not going to go up against the guys who are paying his salary. So give us the reasons why you're against the death penalty, and I'll tell you why I am in favor of the death penalty, but there's a great deal of truth in what you say, so go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, as I was saying, I think it's applied along racial lines, particularly in the South, Florida, Mississippi, Texas. If you have dark skin and you're poor, it's very likely that you'll get the death penalty for committing murder as opposed to the other way around. It's very capricious. It's very arbitrary. It doesn't seem to be applied across the board evenly from state to state. And it's just too happenstance for my taste. And also a lot of death penalty cases seem to be botched. The evidence isn't done very well, and the prosecution seems to make lots of mistakes when people's lives are in balance. Having said all of that, with and also with what the Supreme Court did last week, tell me where I'm wrong if you think I'm wrong.
Well, I do not believe that the death penalty is something that should go to the Supreme Court. I think it should be handled at the state level, because matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be handled at the state level, number one. Secondly, right now, I am very, very concerned, because we have an amoral society, and we have people working within the legal system who are immoral, and we've got government prosecutors who are withholding evidence from the defendant, who are bringing in perjured testimony, who are intent upon getting conviction at all costs. And I think that the fact that over 150 people on death row have been released because of DNA evidence has now shown they're innocent makes me very, very hesitant for the death penalty. In theory, I am solidly behind the death penalty. On the other hand, when you have a corrupt society, is any man's life safe? When nothing is done to the prosecutors in a capital case where they violate the evidence and where they violate the law, and when they take a man who's innocent and convict him because it looks good on their dossier, and I think that when we find prosecutors are doing that they should be sent to prison. What we need to get back is to a moral society. And in a moral society, I fully support the death penalty. Today, I share your concerns about the death penalty. It's about time we had moral people working in our court system. Is that an answer?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
I think it's a very good answer, and you make a very good point. Thanks for your time.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling. And right now, let's go to Roger. Roger, do you have a question for us?
Yes, if you please, Dr. Stan, and they really pulled the rug at you with these, I guess, two frequency changes now in just a few weeks.
Right, well, of course, but let me tell you the background behind it. First of all, the Navy called the shortwave station and said, with this new powerful transmitter you have that's going all over the world, you're interfering with the naval transmission on 7.535, so you got to change it, and they gave us another, I think, I've forgotten what it was, but anyway, they gave us another frequency, and then the Coast Guard called and said, you're interfering with the Coast Guard. But at least they gave us 3 or 4 days to at least let people know that they were going to be changing the shortwave frequency.
Yeah.
So when you got both the Navy and the shortwave, and it wasn't just our program, it was a number of programs.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not paranoid to think it has anything to do with the message we're putting out. So hopefully we'll be able to stay on this frequency until we go on the summer schedule, and then we'll change again.
Yeah, and I want to pound out your earlier freak. We've been also remiss at promoting anyway, and then Southwest Radio Church is a different one. So the previous 2 hours starting, 4 hours before now, would have been 7.520 for both hours at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then Southwest Radio Church is it should be 7.490 starting today.
All right, fine. And of course, that's where we are, 7.490 for this for our evening program. And, of course, you can also get us at 5835. Go ahead.
Yeah, and on I don't know about the last caller, but a lot of people that are against the death penalty also happen to be for abortion, you know, right to choose, so-called. And, you know, I just, you know, like to come back with, perhaps if you just thought of it as postnatal abortion.
No, I think that I am against abortion, and I'm in favor of the death penalty, but I realize that there is a great deal of injustice out there. And if they are really, and I think we find this over and over again today, where we have corrupt prosecutors, and when you got corrupt prosecutors and no man's life or property are safe, what we need to do is get back to a moral society where prosecutors are answerable not only to the law, they're answerable to God. Maybe if we had people who are answerable to God, we wouldn't be in a degenerate society as we are today.
Yeah, and back to the topic with Mark Levin, I don't know if he joins along with his, I believe it's Judge Napolitano, who's a big lawyer with Fox News, I believe a consultant to them. His new book was, and if you came on an interview I heard there on Point of View a month or so back, called Constitutional Chaos, What Happens When the Government Breaks Its Own Laws. And interestingly, he wasn't giving the Bush administration any quarter in subverting the Constitution and the court's complicity in going along with that. So it would be interesting if you get Mark back to ask him if he shared this view, or is it all directed to the courts accreting to itself powers, or is it, does it also extend to refusal to deny the vestment of powers in an increasingly imperial presidency as well?
Okay, fine. Thank you very much for calling, Roger. Appreciate your input. And let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Will's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Very well, Dr. Stan. I've got a couple of points that are pertinent tonight.
Okay, go ahead.
In regards to the idea for a term limit on the Supreme Court justices, I've been an advocate for that for a long time. And I like the 12-year term that he suggested. That would give us basically three presidential terms, or one and a half if the first one was lucky. And that, I think, is far enough. In addition to that, I'd also like to have an upper age limit, say, tied it to the Social Security actuarial number, and now they're calling it 68 years of age, just to set a cap.
Well, now why? Why is that now? Well, you can have pretty sharp people when they're 76.
Yes, you certainly can. But I would also like to set a lower age limit as well at about 45.
All right.
And that way we would have people who are serving on the bench that would have not only their knowledge and the experience and the maturity and the relevancy to do the job, but they would also know that they could go on and do other things in their life afterwards. Now, the third point, and this comes right out of Socrates' work, and that is to have an exit review by their own peers of the work that they've done. Now, while they're on the bench, what they've said is they've said, and it stands. But when they're coming off the bench, then they are liable or subject to review of their work. And in a society where the morality is somewhat deficient and graft and corruption flows heavily, I think that might bring a certain level of accountability back into the process if they knew that someday their deeds would come to the light and they may be held accountable.
Well, I think one of the most important things is for the American people to really know what's going on. First of all, the American people don't understand that we're a republic, not a democracy. Why is that important? Why? Because in a democracy, why the legislature can do whatever they want to do. In a republic, you have a rule by law. It was established. The Constitution doesn't change. It doesn't evolve. It's not emerging. It was written as it was. And the whole purpose of our federal Constitution was to limit the power of the central authority over the lives of the people, and matters dealing with life and with liberty and with property would be reserved to the states and to the local communities, and that's laid out in the 45th of the Federalist Papers. The fact that we are not a democracy is laid out in the 10th of the Federalist Papers, and none of these things are ever taught in school. Why? Because it has been well known for many, many centuries that democracies always descend into despotism. That's Plato wrote about that. You were talking about Socrates. Well, Plato had written about how democracies always degenerate into despotism. He wrote about that, I believe, in the Republic. He did write about it in the Republic. And certainly our founding fathers understood that. They understood what had happened to ancient Rome. They understood what had happened to all democracies throughout history. Democracy is a wonderful idea. But it depends upon men acting responsibly rather than acting in their own self-interest. And as Alexander Tyler had written so well, it was back in 1787 when he was a professor of ancient history at Edinburgh University. And he said, democracies are temporary forms of government. They last only until such time as the people find they can vote themselves into the public treasury or the public largesse, and then they vote for the politicians who promise to provide for them. The country goes bankrupt and eventually is replaced by a dictatorship. Now, that was written, you know, well over 200 years ago, but it was based not upon what was happening in 1787, but on the history of society, of all societies of the past. So why don't they teach this in school today? Why does the president call us a democracy, and John Kerry call us a democracy, and our college professors call us a democracy, and why are we spreading democracy, which will eventually result in despotism throughout the world? until the American people really understand the foundations of our freedom, and that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and that tyranny and total government are synonymous, nothing is going to change. What we've got to do is get people educated, and then hopefully they will have the courage to take a stand for righteousness and try to preserve this wonderful republic that we inherited from generations past.
That's right. And the democracy idea is really limited to a very small public and a very small territory.
Right.
And once it spans out beyond that, the system of representative government just collapses completely. And the other point that you made, which was so good, was in regards to this transformation of the educational system. I have a collection of textbooks that go back into the middle of the 1800s and some a little earlier than that. And you can just walk through the books by decade and watch how the Republican concept was transformed into the idea of a democracy right through the 1820s is when it really started to come on. And there has been a continuous shift in the educational system. But the Anti-Federalist Papers also spoke against having a Supreme Court, the King Bench. And I think there was a lot of fear and trepidation in the people at that time that they knew how this could run amok, and it has.
And I think it's so interesting to go back and analyze the Anti-Federalist Papers. These were the people who didn't want the Constitution because they feared happening exactly what's happening today. Now, then the people who supported the Constitution said, well, we'll get around that by putting in a Bill of Rights, and we'll specifically specify these things that the federal government cannot do. The Bill of Rights was aimed at limiting the power of the federal government, not
right,
the power
Dr.
of the
Sam.
State government. And you say, well, of course, the right to search and seizure, this was a limitation on the federal government, and every state was to be a republic. The stipulation in our Constitution was every state was to have a republican form of government, having nothing to do with the Republican Party. It was to be established as a nation of laws. Every state was to have that. And, of course, then the state would determine if there was going to be religion was going to be allowed in their schools or not be allowed in their schools. Every state would determine whether they're going to have the death penalty or not. Every state would determine whether there's going to be, the right to search your home. Those were not constitutional guarantees. That was to limit the power of the federal government. And everybody understood that, 200 years ago, and it is amazing how when the Supreme Court began to apply all the limitations placed, or the restrictions placed on the federal government, on the state government. And of course, what basically they said, well, since the federal government can pass no laws having to do with writing, and that would be pornography, then the local community can't have any laws on pornography, and then you degenerate into the immoral state where we are today. And, since the federal government can't pass laws on homosexuality, why, of course, then the local community can't. A local community outlawed abortion because everybody recognized this was murder. But then the federal government comes in and says, oh, no, suddenly we found that women have a right to kill the unborn children. They have a right to kill their unborn children. That right was never in the Constitution. Some states allowed abortion. Most states felt it was murder, and it is murder. And they sold it to the American people all, oh, it had to do with rape and incest. Who could be in favor of rape and incest? So anybody who opposes abortion for rape and incest is obviously must support rape and incest, but it had nothing to do with rape and incest. It was an effort to restrict the population. It was an effort to kill off a whole generation of our young people. Now, we've killed somewhere between 40 and 50 million, of our young people, and that's why we have to open our borders to bring in all the people from other countries, from a different culture, who speak a different language and don't want to be Americans. This is what's happening here. Well, hey, we're out of time, Tim. Hey, thanks so much for calling. Anything else you want to say before I let you go?
No, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And let's go to Tim from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim.
Oh, hi. Dr. Stan, last week with the Supreme Court decision on the minors facing a death penalty, when the President Bush and some of the legislators heard that the Supreme Court judges were citing foreign judges, they acted all dumbfounded, like, oh, this is terrible, we don't know nothing about it. Of course they know exactly about it. They know they have the power to stop it immediately. The executive branch and the judiciary branch, and they're all working in cahoots, you know, right now. And as far as Mark Levin, your last guest there, he mentioned, he brought up liberals again, but he failed to mention that, as you've said, 7 of the 9 Supreme Court justices have been appointed by Republicans.
And, of course, you know, one point, and I'm sure he really doesn't know, although when Souter was having his hearings, Howard Phillips got up and pointed out Souter's long history of supporting abortion. He was the only person who spoke against Souter, and, of course, anybody who checked into his background knew where he was coming from, and I believe that George Herbert Walker Bush knew where he was coming from, but nobody was allowed to let the American people know where Souter was coming from, and, of course, nobody ever heard about Howard Phillips' testimony.
And I had a question for you, but my comment, now, Queen Victoria's husband died sometime around 1850, so our Supreme Court justices adopted these black robes to be in mourning for this man's death. I mean, you know, guys, let's do away with the black robes. It's sometimes used to intimidate us, to keep us in fear. And my question to you, are many of our Supreme Court justices, past and present, were they members of the Skull and Bones, the Masons? Thank you.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Tim dropped off the line, but he asked if many of our members of the Supreme Court were members of the Skull and Bones. Well, certainly William Howard Taft was. He, of course, was President of the United States, and then, of course, was given the position as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. That's quite a, you know, you don't, how many people go from President to Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? And, of course, it was not because he was a brilliant lawyer, but he was Skull and Bones. We know that between 1941 and 1971, why the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. It was during those years that that they found that women had a right to abortion, that they took God and prayer and all these things out of our schools, and they did it knowing exactly what they're doing because Masons worship a different God. They worship the great God of the universe, great architect of the universe, who is exemplified by the pyramid capped by the all-seeing eye that you see on the back of the dollar bill. If you'd like to, of course, to verify what I'm saying, it's covered in a book we carry called Behind the Lodge Door. That's Behind the Lodge Door. And, of course, we cover the exact quotation from that book in Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get the book. You need to read it. You need to understand that the occult forces extend into our Supreme Court, but those same occult forces extend into every aspect of our society today. Now, I don't know how many other Supreme Court justices have been the members of Skull and Bones. I know that many of them have been Masons. Certainly, we know that Earl Warren, the Warren Court, Earl Warren was a Mason. And of course, these people have sworn an allegiance to the great architect of the universe, and whether or not they've realized it or not, they have sworn an oath to Lucifer, because that is what it is. When they go into the lodge, they're told, of course, what do you want? They're asked, and they're told to answer the light. Well, they think maybe the light is Jesus or something, but of course the light that the Mason seeks is Lucifer, and this is covered in the writings of Albert Pike in his book, Morals and Dogma, and you'll find the references to much of that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. So Brotherhood of Darkness is just an introduction to where you can find all of this other information. The dark side has permeated every aspect of our society, and if you have not yet seen the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, you need to get that, you need to watch it, and you need to get others to watch it. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, available by calling, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and for those of you who did not hear our last dissertation, our caller had called in and asked if there were members of the Skull and Bones on the Supreme Court or Masons, and yes, William Howard Taft was not only President of the United States, he went from there to becoming Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. How do you get directly from president to Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the two most powerful positions in America? Well, you belong to Skull and Bones, of course. And, of course, between 1941 and 1971, for a 30-year period, the Masons controlled our Supreme Court majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. So if you want to verify that, the book is Behind the Lodge Dorm, and it's an excellent book. We have it available, or it's quoted in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Now, we do hope that many of you out there will want to begin understanding that behind everything going on are spirits or forces. And you cannot understand anything that is taking place today unless you understand that there is another dimension. There has been a spiritual battle taking place here on Earth since the time of the Garden of Eden, and certainly it's taking place today. And you can only understand what's really taking place if you understand that some people have actually given themselves over to the dark side. And you really need to see the video we mentioned earlier. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And it's interesting, I did a program earlier today in Colorado, and several people called in. We had open lines because our regularly scheduled speaker didn't show up, our guest. And several people called in who'd actually seen that video and talked about the profound impact that video had had on their lives. Talked to a fellow in Southern California today who'd gotten a copy of that and, of course, was showing it to people in his church. You need to get the video. You need to show it to people. You need to understand that many of the people in the music industry are active Satanists. They're disciples of Aleister Crowley, who was known affectionately by the people in Scotland, where he lived on Loch Ness, as the other Loch Ness monster, because Aleister Crowley was a Satanist, and of course his disciples were people like Timothy Leary, Alfred Kinsey, Harry Hay, who formed the homosexual liberation movement, and of course people who worked for Playboy, and pushing pornography on America. It's all part of a planned program. What's happening is not by accident. There are demonic forces behind what's going on today, and that is the conspiracy. Everybody's missed, but the conspiracy, it's a conspiracy against God, and it's described over and over in the Holy Scriptures, in Jeremiah 11:9 and Ezekiel 22:25, in the second Psalm. Understand what this is about? Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can hear our programs there 5 hours a day. You can get our shortwave programs 4 hours a day, satellite 5 hours a day, somewhere in America on radio 5 hours a day. And then, of course, get other people to go to our website. Notice we do carry the Berkey products. You can, of course, listen to our programs, our archive programs there, 5 hours a day if you want to, or as long as you want to. We've got a lot of great material archived there. And sure, pull down our newsletters, read those newsletters, copy those newsletters, pass those newsletters out, and help us to inform the American people about the true nature of the battle. Of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you haven't read it, or seen the video, or heard the audio tape, they are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, give us a call. We'd be glad to send you. I suggest either the November newsletter that goes into how they're poisoning our children with water fluoridation. They know exactly what they're doing. Lowering fertility, lowering intelligence, producing cancers. But then, if you believe there really are too many people in the world, what's wrong with killing off a few hundred million here and there? Could anybody be that crass and indifferent? Yes, unfortunately they could. Pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, well, we'll be back actually the next hour, but for those who are leaving us, till tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Dad? Dad? Hello?
Okay, 5.9.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and our telephone numbers out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from the eastern part of the country, Mr. Don Wiskin, and he's going to be talking about an unusual treatment for coronary artery disease. Now, before we put him on, I checked out the story, and there's a story about a man who lived many years ago who actually had severe coronary artery disease. He had a number of bypass operations, and finally the doctor said to him, "We can't operate you anymore. I mean, you might as well make your will out. You're going to die." And for some reason or other, that man began why he went on to this diet of cayenne peppers, and of course he lived for many, many years. He eventually did die, but apparently our guest today had a very, very similar experience. And you know, doctors can only do so much for patients. And when, of course, you have extensive arteriosclerosis, and of course you cannot, not a subject for coronary bypass, why, your outlook is pretty poor. Well, this will be an incredible story you're going to hear tonight. But let's hear it anyway, because I think, there are other alternatives than what we've been told. Don, why don't you tell your story?
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here to tell my story. And that was Dick Quinn you were talking about there, I take it.
Dick Quinn, right.
Yes. And Dick Quinn actually would have lived longer if he had continued to see his doctor and they had caught what was happening, because, you know, we do need doctors no matter what we talk about here tonight. You know, we need the doctors and nurses. They are very critical to our longevity.
Okay, well, what happened to you now? You had some heart problems?
Yes, actually, in July of 97, I lost my 44-year-old brother. He had a heart attack in his apartment. They found him dead in the bathroom a month before his 45th birthday. Then in January of 98, my mother had a stroke and passed away at home in bed, which is where she would like to have gone. And then in February of 98, my brother Doug at 53 had a heart attack and passed away. And then in June of 98, I was 42 years old when my wife came home and found me on the floor. We decided that I had had a heart attack and that we should go to the hospital right away. When we got there, I was in so much pain, I didn't know what was going to happen. And the doctors told my wife to go home and be prepared for the worst, because I may not survive the night. I guess I'd had a massive myocardial infarct.
Why didn't they put you in the hospital, though, or try to do something?
Oh, they did. I walked through the doors of the hospital, and the reception said, "Sit down and give me your information." I said, "I really don't have time. I'm in a lot of pain." I threw some cards down on her desk, which one of them was my health card. I said, "My wife is parking the car. She's, you know, she'll be right in." And I wandered right through the double doors, and there was a lady standing there who just happened to be a doctor, and to my luck, they had an empty bed in the area where all the heart machines were.
Okay.
Now, I did get a streptokinase-based thermobolic agent, which is a pretty long name, but I believe that, you know, modern medicine saved my life that night.
All right, fine. So they gave you something to dissolve the clot in your heart, was that it?
I believe that's what it is, yeah.
I know. That's a little that's probably come out since I left medicine. What year was that?
1998.
Okay, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Don, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Don Liskin, and he's telling us that he went to the hospital. They gave him some sort of an anabolic agent. Our engineer, the producer this evening, is a physician who, of course, is still practicing. I've been out of the field pretty well since 1994. But he said that there was something called TPA that we were giving at that time. Anyway, they gave you the anabolic agent, and you did it clear up the chest pain? You got feeling better?
Well, actually, I wound up in ICU, and I was a roofing contractor at the time, and I guess while I was in ICU, I wound up with their portable phone, and I was on the phone a lot. I really don't remember much. What I do remember is 2 days later, waking up in the morning and saying, what am I doing here? I don't have time for this, in total denial of what happened to me, and I checked myself out of the hospital. That was the 11th of June. On the 13th, I was back in and saw the doctors, and they gave me some metoprolol and sent me on home, you know, to help me with the chest pain and told me to buy some nitroglycerin. And there was a doctor's strike going on that weekend. And then on the 17th of June, I had another heart attack and wound up back in the hospital. And this time I was very cooperative because I was getting nitroglycerin every day, sometimes morphine for the pain. I went ahead and had an angioplasty. I did have a 95% block in one artery, 75% in the rest, and 35% of my heart was gone to damaged tissue, and I had a 38% ejection fraction with no upper body strength, and I was an owner of a roofing company at the time.
That's not very good, because you've got to have pretty good upper body strength if you're going to be doing that sort of work.
Well, I couldn't even pick up a bundle of shingles after that, after the angioplasty, and they let me out of the hospital.
Okay, fine. So, of course, now you don't have a very good outlook. If you've lost a good part of your heart muscle, why, things don't look very good for you.
No, actually, things were very bleak. I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I had a roofing company. I had all these people working for me. I had obligations, and I didn't want to give it up. I was only, well, I turned 43 in the hospital. I was very young. I didn't want to give up my life, but I guess I wasn't alone, but we joined the Healthy Heart Program, and I say we because my wife became very involved in all of this. But I joined the Healthy Heart Program, and I learned about diet and exercise, and I went about trying to live with the problem that I had. While I was in there, there was quite a few people who were losing their driver's license, and they drove truck for a living. There was a lot of people that were having a lot of problems, and I was really amazed at that. But then in February of 99, my wife was taking a tofu cooking class, and one of the people there said, there's this garlic cayenne mixture that you should take. You know, I'll fax you over some information. And they sent over some information.
Hold that thought right there, and we'll be bring our business. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Don Liskin. He's telling us the story, and of course, he is 42, going 43. He has a massive heart attack. They give him a thromboembolic material. He goes home a few days later. He's having more in the way of pain. He goes back in the hospital. He eventually ends up having multiple angioplasties, and of course, but he also has at least a large part of his heart has been lost. At least the muscle is no longer functioning. He has upper body weakness. He really does not have good ejection. What, 30%, 33% ejection factor? What was it? 38%. Well, that's not very good. So anyway, his wife is attending a cooking session, and somebody says, oh, you need to take this garlic cayenne pepper material, and they send the material to your wife, and what does it say?
Well, basically, it talked about how the history of these herbs was so great, and that a lot of this information was trying to be suppressed by the system because they gave up on natural medicines back in the early 60s. They didn't really see in North America a future in natural medicines as they still do in Europe. The gentleman who makes it got his pharmacy degree in Germany back in the early 60s. Where he had to spend 2 years studying natural medicines first because 40% of the doctor-prescribed medicine in Europe, and Germany especially, is natural medicines first before they go to the allopathic medicine.
Well, I think what's really so interesting about this is that this product is primarily cayenne pepper. What does cayenne pepper do? It's a vasodilator, and it dilates vessels in the heart and vessels throughout the body. But primarily, it seems to have some sort of predilection to dilate the vessels in the heart. And so pick up the story from there. So there is a pharmacological explanation for what you're about to hear, but we do not recognize that here in America. Why? Why? Because there's lots of others out here. Viagra for your heart, that's the latest thing. Well, you can take Viagra for your heart or all these other things for your heart, or you can get your, angioplasty. And of course, before, everybody was getting a CABG. That was a coronary artery bypass operation. Now, increasingly, why, it's the invasive cardiology, and they're putting stents in your arteries there to keep them open, but so often they will tend to clog over, unfortunately. So pick up the story from there.
Yes. Well, actually, there's seven herbs in there. There's the cayenne, the garlic, the hawthorn, valerian, milk thistle, ginkgo biloba, and bilberry. And I really believe it's the combination of these seven herbs that cause this synergy that allow it to do what it does.
All right. Well, now, did you actually get this in a pill form or what?
Well, it was only in tincture form in the very beginning, all in liquid and a very strong smell. And when you put 15 drops from the eyedropper underneath your tongue 3 times a day, in the beginning you know what's there, and then you do get used to it after a while. But in 2001, I convinced Sam to try and make it into capsule form. And in doing the frequency testing to ensure that it was there, he wound up with very high counts of the Vedexin and the Allicin in the product. That made him feel that the product would work. And he's actually tried to make the capsules at another company, and they weren't able to get the frequencies that he requires to put the product on the shelf. So he's very, very concerned about always having the highest quality product on the market that he can put out there.
Now, is he a European, or is he living here in the United States?
He's actually living in Canada, but he's an Egyptian who went to Germany to study pharmacy. While he was there, I guess power changed in Egypt, and his father came and said to him, you know, you can't come back to Egypt, they will kill you, you're too outspoken. And so he went looking for a country, and he actually applied to the United States and Canada, but Canada gave him the indication that he could really call this place home. And so he's been in Edmonton, Alberta since 1968. He actually lobbied the government here so that when you go and get a new prescription filled out, the pharmacist gives you a piece of paper telling you the uses and the potential side effects of it. And he also lobbied the government so that the drug companies, instead of using just a DIN number, started putting names on their drugs. He also designed the course that they're using at the University of Alberta to study pharmacognosy, which they haven't done there in many, many years. But only recently in some provinces in Canada have they passed a law that allowed doctors to work with natural medicines without persecution from the College of Physicians and Surgeons. So herbs are resurging, especially here in Canada. Even in Texas, they have quite a course going on in pharmacognosy there, and they're quite respected for their work.
Somebody just called in and said that Viagra is not being used for coronary artery disease. Actually, there's been some recent studies on it. It is not approved, but it is being studied to be used because it dilates the blood vessels. And some people are saying that this may be another approach for coronary artery disease. When I said that, of course, I was said it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Because they would far rather, of course, you use an allopathic medicine rather than these herbs and spices. But there is some study that's being done on using this type of substance in Viagra because it does dilate blood vessels, and it can, at least they believe, dilate blood vessels in the heart, and it may be. But I stand corrected. It is not at the present time being advocated, but the studies are going on that. Anyway, of course, they started developing this. They used Allicin. For the people out in the audience who don't know, Allicin is the active ingredient in garlic. Go ahead and tell the story there, Don.
Great. Actually, you're talking about Viagra, and one of the doctors, a naturopathic doctor in North Vancouver, Dr. Matson, you can find him on my website. He gave this product to an elderly man, and him and his wife were in, and he started taking it, and about 3 months later, his wife came back into Dr. Matson and said, Dr. Matson, is there something you can give my husband to slow him down a little bit? And he says, what do you mean? And she says, well, he's starting to get erections and wanting to have sex again. So, you know, the Cartavite was helping his blood flow to such a point that he wanted to be active in life again.
All right, fine. So basically, of course, this does have a pharmacological effect.
Yes, it certainly does. And
of course, how long has this product been available on the market?
Well, there's a history of it for back over 20 years, but Sam's been making this product since 1999. He actually made it for the Alberta Chelation Association, and that's how I found out about it, was through them. And they wanted a product that could help the people that the chelation wasn't working for, because it works for 7 or 8 out of 10 people, and it's very, very expensive. But we've seemed to have about a 99.9% success rate. Anyone who takes this product at least 3 times a day, usually within 6 months, their doctors are scratching their head in amazement as to why these people are actually doing so much better in their overall health. I'm coming on 50 years old this year, so it's been 8 years since my heart attack, just about. And I'll tell you, I feel younger at, 7 years. I feel younger at 50 than I did at 40, because at 40 I was heading down the path of self-destruction. I mean, I didn't eat right. I worked a lot of hours. I was very stressed out. I was your typical average hardworking male out there trying to make a living.
All right, fine. And so now, of course, you gave up then your roofing business, and you've gone to actually, are you selling the product here in the United States?
Yes, we are. We come on the shows like yours, and we bring our message out to people. And for those who think that you know, there might be something great about this 7-herb combination, they get involved, and before you know it, they're telling their friends, and the word of mouth is very strong on this product.
All right, fine. And, of course, is it available at health food stores?
You know, we haven't got there yet. It's amazing how hard it is to get into the stores. We've been working on getting there. We have a few pharmacies in the Midwestern United States, and we have a few other stores, and we have other people who basically have got involved because we've helped them in such a way that they decided they wanted to buy our product and share it with their friends.
Well, now, of course, is there any scientific studies on this specifically where they did a sort of a double-blind study where one group took the Cartavite and the other didn't, and they didn't know which was taking which?
Actually, we've been trying to get that done, and in Canada, a couple of years ago, well, actually this year, the new Office of Natural Health Products took over in 2004, and now we can do a double-blind study for around $100,000. I'm trying to talk Queen's University into doing a study on it, since they have a teaching hospital here. And actually, one of the doctors at Queen's University has got an $8 million grant from Congress to study natural medicine on men's prostate health.
All right, fine. Now, are you in Canada, or you're living in the United States?
I live in Canada. I've lived in the United States, but I'm a Canadian citizen.
Okay, fine, because you don't have that Canadian accent at all.
Well, I spent 4 years in Las Vegas, 3 years in California, a year in Florida. I do have an Ottawa drawl, so they say.
All right, fine. Well, I didn't pick that up. Maybe a Canadian would have, anyway. But you don't say oota, something of that sort.
Hey.
Anyway.
Huh.
Anyway, of course, this product is being marketed openly in Canada at the present time.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And when do you think you're going to be able to get some sort of a double-blind study done on this? It actually now comes in a capsule form rather than the tincture form?
Yeah, it comes in both tincture and capsule. And as for a blind, double-blind study, you know, even if we can get one done, it'll be a couple of years before we get the results. They're not really in a hurry. But what we've got here so far is anecdotal evidence, and lots of it. I should have faxed you over my medical reports, because I'm sure you would have liked to have seen them, and I will if you would like to see them. My doctor was so amazed she photocopied them and gave them to me and said no one would ever believe you ever had a heart attack.
Why, of course, you know, from a purely scientific level, of course, we'd just love to see well, we'll be back here in just a moment here, and we're talking to Don Wiskin about this product. It's called Cartavite, and of course there is evidence, of course, that the peppers do actually tend to dilate the blood vessels. They seem to work very well. But anyway, we'll be back in just a moment. If you have a question you'd like to ask, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Don Wiskin. He's talking about this product. And is this available? Where is this available at the present time?
Well, you can call a toll-free number, and you can purchase it there. And actually, Cartavite is regularly $69.95.
We can't put the price out because it's a non-commercial station.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Okay, well, people can call us, or they can go to our website, and if they want to call us, can I give up my number?
You sure can.
It's 877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. There is somebody there to answer your calls at the moment. And you can go to our website at www.heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com. I called it heartdrop.com because that's what it was. It was a drop that seemed to change my overall health.
All right, fine. And, of course, you have had certainly apparently very, very good results from this. And you're hoping then that, would this study would be done in Canada, would be done here in the United States, or what?
Well, we'll have to get one done here in Canada first. But as for, I mean, when you say the studies on things like Hawthorn, for instance, the New York Heart Association has human data that shows that Hawthorn is good for cardiac insufficiency. We have thousands of years of history with these herbs. These didn't just come in the last 50 years. They actually got suppressed over the last 70 or 80 years, and they're making a resurgence. These are things that God put here for us to improve and to live off of, and we've ignored them because we're so involved in this fast pace of today. But when you stop and even just look at like the benefits of garlic, with over 30 different sulfur compounds that can chelate heavy metals out of your body, can help kill off yeast overgrowth and to just start to make you feel better and give you more energy and improve your immune system naturally. These are things that are well known on the history of these herbs. Bilberry, as we know, is a very high antioxidant, was used by the British pilots in the First World War for night vision. There's a lot of great benefits here. Milk thistle, we're starting to hear a lot about it now. People are using it as a hangover medication. If you've drank too much alcohol, because alcohol poisons your liver, the milk thistle helps to relieve some of that strain. And also that's why Sam put it into the Cartavite, because he knew that the liver was compromised because of most people who take this are on a handful of heart medication. Even though it's not just about the heart, you know, it's really about getting these toxins and metals out of our body. We hear them talking about the thimerosal and the mercury all the time, but there's more chemicals than that. There's over 77,000 chemicals that we're exposed to on a regular basis. And these are things that never come out of our body. So, you know, if we can improve our overall health and outlook on life just by taking one simple product, then, you know, we can live a longer and more healthier life, and we don't feel that growing old aging that I was feeling 10 years ago.
Right, of course, and I think that there's no question at all that herbs have been around for a long period of time. They can certainly have benefits. People have to know, of course, how to use them. Certainly garlic is an excellent product, and certainly there's been a great deal of work that's been done on garlic. And, of course, as you say, certain garlic products actually do tend to control cold and cold symptoms of respiratory infections quite effectively. Well, we're going to, of course, bring our other stations back on board here in just a moment, so hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Don Wiskin. If you have a question, call for Don. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, Don, is this a product that is certainly gaining a certain amount of acceptance?
Yeah, so I've actually been doing this full-time for 5 years, Dan. And when I ran across Sam with the Cartavite originally, he had been marketing it. Well, he actually hadn't been marketing it. He had a pharmacy, and the Alberta Chelation Association was doing all the marketing. I was quite fortunate to have run across it, but I kind of believe that maybe it was part of my path for my destiny. You never really know what you're supposed to do in life, but if you listen to all the right signals, things kind of happen.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, does this go along and be used with chelation?
Actually, it is, and you don't really need the chelation. It actually was made for the people who couldn't afford the chelation, because chelation, as you know, can cost you $3,000 to $5,000 to $7,000, and you don't know whether it's going to work when it's all over and done with. Whereas this product here is relatively inexpensive, and you can take it on your own. You can ask your doctor about it. Some doctors are familiar with natural medicines nowadays, and they will tell you that's fine. In the 5 years that I've been dealing with it, Sam, being a licensed pharmacist, also understands, you know, the causes and effects of the other medications that people are on, and we've had absolutely no side effects whatsoever.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, has there been any studies at all to show the change in the arterial blood flow or the change in the cardiac output at all after using that? Is there, have there been any studies, or has, I don't suppose anybody, when they're feeling better, would want to have an angiogram to see if the coronary flow is better?
Actually, quite a few people have had it done, but they're having a hard time getting their medical records from their doctors. It seems that, well, I mean, right here in Kingston, Ontario, where I am, we have three health food stores right here that carry the product. There's about 135,000 people live here. The Kingston Heart Clinic, for some reason, despises me and tries to tell people not to take our product for some reason. They've had about 300 or 400 people come through there that have had dramatic changes in their health, and they can't explain it, and so they're fighting it. And I don't know why, because I think they think I'm just a snake oil salesman or something like that. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, if they can't explain it, they seem to be against it. And I really find that sad, because they didn't study natural medicines in university. So unless they've had illnesses themselves that they couldn't overcome and they've had to turn to alternative methods or more natural methods, they don't really understand what's going on. My doctor here in town, who wasn't my doctor during my heart attack, was very excited to get me in there and to run a bunch of tests on me, and he asked me when I came back in to get the results of my test if I could bring him a couple bottles of the Cardivite, because he'd like to look into it further. He had some patients he'd like to try it out on. So, you know, some people really are out there to help, and others, well, as one doctor said in 1977, when there was only 70,000 bypasses done that year, his biggest fear was that the industry was going to view bypass operations as a business. And unfortunately, sometimes business gets in the way of reality.
Well, why don't we get that telephone number out one more time, and then the website. And if there anybody out there in the listening audience who would like to call us, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's go ahead and get your website out, and of course that telephone number one more time.
Certainly. The website is, I can give you the one that spells Cardivite, because Cardivite is Cardovite.us. Cardivite is Cardovite, Latin for life. And our phone number is 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. And I'm surprised we're not getting some calls from people who've taken our product, because we have quite a following in California as well.
Well, I don't know what. I guess all those people must be sleeping, or maybe they're listening to Heart Bell or something of the sort. Anyway, I really want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening. We do know, apparently, that there have been some fairly good results from at least the cayenne pepper. I don't know the product, but I think it's rather intriguing to consider. And I appreciate so very, very much your being with us this evening.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Dr. Stan. Would you like me to send you a couple of bottles?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Dave?
Yeah, I'll do that, and I'll fax you my medical records at the same time so you can see what really happened for me.
All right, fine. Well, thanks very much, Don. It's been a pleasure having you with us here.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest this evening was Don Wiskin, interesting story, and of course, there has been at least some pharmacological reason why cayenne pepper products are beneficial. Of course, you have to be very careful to get it in a capsule form. It doesn't upset your stomach. Some people, of course, can take it without any difficulty. People like me with a sensitive stomach, at least the tincture might be a little difficult. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment. We'll open up our lines here at Radio Liberty. Open lines the last half hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're going to have an open line this last half hour, and so if you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We know there's been a real campaign here this last, few months to convince the American people that there is a real problem with autism. And there have been articles in Time Magazine, lead article about 2 weeks ago on autism, talking about the fact that there are one in every 160 children in America has autism. Now, 20 years ago, one in every 10,000 children has autism. Now, one in every 160 children has autism. A marked increase in ADD. ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, but even more, and even more tragic, is a growing number of children with learning and reading and other mental disabilities. And it is estimated by the Centers for Disease Control that one in every six children in the United States has a learning disability, or neurodevelopmental abnormality. Even more frightening is if you look at the test scores of American children and compare them with children in many other countries throughout the world, and our children, by the time they graduate from high school, have real difficulty competing scholastically on scholastic tests with children from other countries in the world. And the question is, why is that? Well, a lot of people would describe this to the failure of our educational system, and I'm certainly no defender of the educational system. I believe we have an educational system that has totally failed, because most of our children, when they go into college, they have to take bonehead English and many times bonehead mathematics. They just cannot keep up with the university requirements. And, of course, I will tell you that an awful lot of children, when they graduate from foreign schools and they come to the United States, would go directly into the third year of our college, because our educational system has been gradually lowered. Our standards have been lowered. We're dumbing down our children. And why is all this happening? Well, when we get back, of course, from the break, why we're going to tell you as we bring our other stations on board that there has been an organized effort to conceal from the American people the toxic effect of the thimerosal in our vaccines. That it isn't as if it were by accident. This has been known for almost 40 years, that this is a brain poison that destroys the mental capacity of so many people in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I was mentioning, of course, off the air that to our listeners that did not go to the commercials, that we have seen here in this last few months, an organized effort to convince the American people that there has been a tremendous increase in autism in the children in this country and a tremendous increase in other neurodevelopmental abnormalities, but to assure them that, of course, there is no relationship between autism and the skyrocketing incidence of autism and the vaccines that have been given. Now, of course, one of the theories is thimerosal in the vaccines plays an important part in what's happening as far as autism is concerned, because mercury is highly, of course, neurotoxic. Now, right now, of course, you hear a lot of talk about, you know, the coal-burning plants, why they emit mercury into the atmosphere, and people are breathing in microscopic amounts, I mean, infinitesimally small amounts of mercury. But, of course, it's going to poison their brains. Well, we've got to do something about those coal-burning electric plants. Or certainly no pregnant woman should be eating fish, because do you know that there's mercury in fish and tuna fish and swordfish? And, oh, pregnant women shouldn't be eating fish because mercury is toxic. Oh, we want to protect the children. But up until just a year or two ago, every child in the nursery, the first day of birth, was given a dose of mercury that was 87 times, actually, according to Dr. Hilleman, 87 times the maximum dose was allowed by the Environmental Protection Agency. and that case came out recently, and the discovery when Merck had to turn records over to the people who were suing Merck for their hepatitis B vaccine and for the autism produced by that. Dr. Hilleman is certainly one of the most distinguished vaccinologists in the country. He's worked for Merck for many, many years. I don't know whether he's retired, but we do know that back in 1991, he told the people at Merck, according to this directive, that they had actually were giving 87 times the maximum dose of mercury to the children on the first day of their birth. Why would you do something like that? Unintentionally? They knew about it in 1991, and they've known about it ever since then, but they can't let the American people know the truth. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Let me, of course, go into the background of some interviews we've been doing with Dr. Russell Blaylock, and if you haven't heard my interviews with Dr. Blaylock on the special government study that was done in the year 2000 in Georgia. They got a retreat there, and they got together some 51 experts on mercury and on vaccines. And there was a Dr. Verstraeten, who at that time was working for the Centers for Disease Control, and he had the CDC statistics. They've kept the statistics on children, of course, with their vaccines, and of course they've gotten these statistics from the large HMOs that carefully monitored the children. And there was no question at all, as they went through the statistics, as they were presented at this secret meeting, this organized by the CDC and the NIH and by our government, although there were a number of outside people there. There were people from the vaccine manufacturers. There were experts on neurological development in children and experts on all sorts of things, on pediatrics, and there were people who were experts in vaccinology. Their whole life centers around giving vaccines to children, thinking that somehow we're helping them. And, of course, the last thing that I think that most people would want to do would be to hurt a child. But when they presented the statistics, the CDC's own statistics, it became very obvious that there was no way you could manipulate those figures to come up with any other conclusion, that the children who received mercury-containing vaccines had a much higher incidence of autism and other neurodevelopmental abnormalities than children who did not. So what was so interesting is one of the people spoke out and said, you know, I want you to know that my grandchildren were born just last night, and I'll be damned, it was his term, I'll be damned if I'm going to allow them to get any vaccines until we know the truth of this whole matter. And another person spoke up and said, well, you know, what we're talking about is losing a point of IQ or a lot of points in IQ, but I'm not going to have any of my grandchildren lose any of their IQs. And many of the people expressed a feeling that they weren't going to have their children vaccinated, but they had to keep the results of this study secret. It was marked confidential. It was not available. It was actually published some 4 years later in the journal Pediatrics, but by that time the CDC expert who'd presented the figures to this meeting in Georgia had left the CDC, and now he was working for Glaxo over in Great Britain that is being sued for their vaccines. And, of course, amazingly enough, the entire story had changed, and he totally perverted what was said in that article that was published in Journal of Pediatrics, and said that they found no relationship at all between the vaccines containing thimerosal and the skyrocketing incidence of autism. Now, this report was suppressed. The only reason it was obtained at all was that Congressman David Weldon, who is a congressman from Florida, but he's also a physician, and he heard about this report somehow or other. He intercepted a letter that was being sent back and forth from somebody in the CDC to one of the people who was on this commission. He asked for a copy of the report, this financed by your government, your tax money. And, of course, the CDC refused to release it. So he had to sue the congressman, had to sue the Centers for Disease Control, which is a government agency, which, of course, is beholden to Congress. He had to sue them under the Freedom of Information Act to get a copy of the report. Now, I got a copy of the report. I have it. Congressman Weldon was kind enough to send it to me, but my good friend, Dr. Russell Blaylock, actually got a copy of this report and had it went through this, and you can go up on Mercola.com on the internet. That's Mercola.com, and pull down his analysis of it. And he goes through, it's about a 265 or 275 page report of exactly what was discovered at that meeting, what was brought out. The CD's own statistics on the relationship between the children. Some children were getting DPT shots, for instance, without thimerosal in it. Other children were getting DPT shots with thimerosal, and you were somewhere between 2 and 6 times the increase of autism in these children. But there was no question at all, a dramatic increase in the incidence of autism in the children who were getting the mercury shots. Now, why is this important? Why it's important? Because these children can, of course, be chelated even at a very young age, and there are even different types of chelation where you don't have to give them anything intravenously. You can do this by putting certain things on the skin that will actually draw this out, and those of you who have heard my interviews with Dr. Rimland of the American Society for Autism Research, if we're going to be putting together a 4-tape set on autism, so that you will have all of this information. There is a great deal that can be done for these children, but you've got to get to them early. And everything is being done by the controlled media, and the media works in concert. And if you don't believe that this whole thing is coordinated, listen to ABC, CBS, and NBC, then read Time Magazine and read your local newspapers. It's almost as if somebody had given an order and they all pick up the same story. And the whole theme is, do not treat your child. Oh, don't chelate them. Don't do anything that might help them, because we can assure you, the experts have all said, there's no relationship between mercury and the vaccines and autism, and that's a lie. These government reports, and we have that government report. We have a copy of it. We have it on CD. You can actually get it. I think it's on safeminds.com up on the internet, but you can get Dr. Blalock's a summary of the report either at Mercola.com, Mercola.com, or simply look up on the internet under Russell Blalock. You can hear our interviews with him. We have a wonderful 2-hour interview, and it'll be on a new 4-tape set we're putting together on mercury. You need to get this information, and you need to get it to everybody you know. If we can get the American people to realize that they're being lied to by the media, their doctors really don't know, and you have to get the information and get to your doctor and let him understand. Doctors don't want to hurt their patients, but somebody does. Why do you think that they're left the thimerosal, the toxic doses of thimerosal in the influenza vaccine, and then they've had a real drive in this last few months to get everybody to take an influenza vaccine, knowing there were toxic doses, and for a child 6 months of age whose brain is still in the process of development, giving him a toxic dose of mercury and aluminum in the influenza vaccine? We know what it does to adults, because Dr. Fudenberg has this up on his website. If you haven't gotten it, well, look up Fudenberg, F-U-D-E-N-B-E-R-G, or if you can't find it, you can give us a call and we'll get it for you. And, of course, what it showed was that if you are between 60 and 65 and you believe what the doctor tells you and you get your flu shot, 3 or 4 of them over a 5-year period, your incidence of Alzheimer's disease goes up 1,000%. And if you don't mind getting Alzheimer's disease, you go ahead and take your mercury vaccine. But what about those children? Why are we demanding that those children get their influenza shots when they know that is going to destroy their minds? Let's go to Bill calling from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Before I ask my question, I wanted to say that I thought you did an absolutely wonderful job debating on this weekend's John Loeffler show.
I told John he ought to get somebody else, but he couldn't find anybody else who was foolish enough to get involved debating a professional debater from the pharmaceutical industry.
You blew him out of the water, so I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you so very much. Well, we'll be playing that, I guess, maybe this Wednesday evening here on our own radio station. Well, thank you so much.
I wanted to ask real quickly, do you think this is disinformation, the stories that you're hearing about the contamination in the fish such as tuna and salmon and such, that this is basically disinformation to account for why mercury's appearing in everybody's system, or if there really is any truth to that.
Well, I think that there probably is a little bit of mercury in the fish, and no mercury is safe for you. There's just no level of mercury that's safe, because it is one of the most toxic, neurotoxic substances available. But, you know, you can get mercury, and you can get it, you know, in your from your fillings. And your fillings are 50% mercury, your silver fillings. And, of course, we know, they've done all sorts of studies to show that that mercury, when it's released, when you chew, goes directly to your brain. And there's a direct relationship between Alzheimer's disease and the mercury fillings. So certainly those should be gotten out. I think that there's an effort to divert us from what's going on, because if you check, for instance, a pregnant woman's blood, you're very often going to find mercury there. They're not going to tell her that it's coming from her fillings, you know, and so they'll say, oh, you've probably been eating some fish. Now, but when we have pregnant women, we're telling them, oh, if you really, we want you to have an influenza shot, you know, so that you don't get influenza. Knowing full well that that mercury is going to be concentrated in the placenta, it's going to get in the brain of their children. There really are evil and wicked people out here, Bill. And when you understand this, it really all makes sense. If you're looking at it from a logical point of view, none of it makes sense. And remember what Bertrand Russell talked about in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, and where he simply wrote about that we were going to have a selective breeding process. By selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and the ruled will increase until they become almost different species. At that point, a revolt of the plebs would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton. And he talks about how we're going to change our children by, and here's what he says, I'm quoting from page 50 of Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society, diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. Page 50, The Impact of Science on Society. One of the elite who wrote it all out for us. They're going to breed a special rate, they're going to dumb our people down, and they're going to mold the character of our children. We can see what a great job they're doing.
It's just very hard for me to believe that a deep water fish that's caught out in that far out of the ocean could be contaminated to a point that would affect our health, when we are getting these direct effects from these aluminum or the mercury in the fillings.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think this is a very minor issue, Bill. I think that what they want to do is divert our attention from the truth. I think that you're probably right. This, they keep talking about, oh, my goodness, you realize that there's mercury that comes out of coal-burning power plants and mercury in the fish. They never talk about the toxic doses in your mouth that are put there by your dentist, who doesn't know what he's doing and is never allowed to hear the truth. But even worse is that we're giving it in the injections, and they know what they're doing. Judy Gerberding, who is the head of the CDC, was asked at a congressional hearing, you know, are there any studies that show that thimerosal is safe? Now, they've been giving this, you know, to our children for 40 years, and she said there are no studies that show thimerosal is safe. Well, as Dr. Blaloff points out, there are over 2,000 studies that show that it's harmful, and not one study that show that it's safe, and they're still putting it in, the influenza vaccine. They know what they're doing. They just don't want us to know.
And we probably have no idea as to how much is going in this brand new bird flu vaccine that's being mass manufactured.
Oh boy, isn't that amazing how they're coordinating all across America by radio and television and by magazines, and they're creating this terrible fear of a flu that has killed some 45 people so far over in Thailand and Vietnam. I think they have one case in Vietnam or in Cambodia. One case, a person to person, but boy, this could turn into something terrible. But don't you worry, we're putting together this flu vaccine. I bet you that has thimerosal in it too. I don't know, but I don't trust these people. Have you ever read the book Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy?
I bought it, but I haven't read it yet.
You've got to read that. You've got to read it. It got a little bad language in it, but it got a wonderful story. And as Tom Clancy says in the foreword of the book, there's information in this book that the government doesn't want you to know.
It's just I'll close with this. It just amazes me that they have supposedly manufactured 2 million doses here for U.S. consumption of this bird flu vaccination when the disease doesn't exist yet.
Well, don't worry. It might exist, though. But the government's here to help us. Isn't that give you a nice warm feeling?
Thank you.
God bless you. Thanks very much. And we've got Kurt calling here from Rio Del Mar. And, of course, we'll take Kurt in just a moment as soon as we get back from the break. But I think it's so important that you get the information on mercury. We've got a wonderful four-tape set on mercury. We've got a video on mercury. And we're going to be putting together the up-to-date a four-tape set on autism. We're going to be putting another four-tape set together on mercury. You can right now get my two-hour interview with Dr. Blaylock going to the background of the secret government report. It is available on the Internet. We do have, at least it's on CD here, we can make a copy of the CD. Or so you can run it off yourself, or if you want to get it from us, we can provide it. But it's a rather an extensive report, over 250 pages. But we'll be back in just a moment. Well, we've got Kurt calling from Rio Del Mar. Hi, Kurt, how are you doing? There we are. Hi, Kurt, how are you doing?
Yeah, fine. You raised some points in the last half hour that I wanted to ask you about and expand on. You mentioned this cardiovite, and you mentioned in passing autism. Do you think that stuff would chelate an autistic kid?
I really have no idea. I really don't know anything about it. And all I do know that the cayenne peppers have some beneficial effect, but I don't know anything about this proprietary product. And really, I don't want to offer any opinion on it till I've really seen some double-blind studies. And so I really know if this is going to be effective or not. I would feel much better if we did have some studies on it.
Well, given the substances in it, it sounds like it could be very useful for possibly even Lyme disease, but what about Alzheimer's?
Well, we just don't know, and so I'm going to be like that unidentifiable source who declined to be quoted but set off the record. He had no comment.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, Kurt. Anyway, that was Kurt, and Kurt raises an interesting question, but I'm not going to offer a medical opinion on a product I really don't know anything about, but it may be a very, very good product, and I certainly hope that it is, but we're just going to have to wait and see. I want to get some of it. We certainly want to look at the studies, but of course we'd like to see some fairly large studies, and especially studies of people who had coronary artery disease before, and of course that they got better afterwards, and this certainly could be told by doing angiograms on them and see what had really happened, or change in the cardiac output. There are all sorts of studies that could be done, but I really don't want to recommend products unless I really believe in them, or unless they have been extensively studied, the principles have been studied. Now, we do recommend certain products as we think they're a good scientific basis for their working. And we will point out that many of the things that are being given to the people today are being given under false assumptions. For instance, so many of the COX-2 inhibitors. They knew that Vioxx had a sevenfold increase in the incidence of cardiac death, or at least heart attack, sevenfold increase in the incidence of heart attack. If you took Vioxx, even low-dose Vioxx, they knew that before the product was ever released. It was put on the market. Why? Because there was going to be a lot of money to be made. Billions of dollars were made, and probably between 80 and 100,000 people had heart attacks, and 30 to 40% of them died. That's an awful lot of people whose lives were destroyed when they knew the product was unsafe. But you see, people who work for the FDA, if they do a good job, then, of course, they leave the FDA. They get a good job working for the pharmaceutical industry. I wonder why. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there and you listen to us and you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of mankind, we do hope that many of you will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do that by simply giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And of course, if you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, my November newsletter, I rather like it. It goes into the background of how they're using water fluoridation. to lower fertility, to lower intelligence, to promote cancer, to interfere with the thyroid function, to increase infirmity in old age, to attack our bones and increase the incidence of bone fractures, and to attract our endocrine systems. All of these things are known by the scientific studies, and if you want the scientific studies, they're all listed in Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and we're putting together a syllabus on water fluoridation, and we'll be having a talk on that. But, of course, if you want to get, and of course you can get Russell Blaylock's excellent book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, where they have a chapter on mercury, a chapter on fluoride, a chapter on aspartame, NutraSweet, and MSG, a chapter on vaccinations. What should we think about vaccinations? Are we going to, what's the cost-benefit ratio on vaccination? Are we really going to benefit by taking and giving our children 30 or 35 vaccines, the vaccine shots by the time they're 3 or 4 years old? And what are the devastating effects that they're going to have on the health of our children? I used to, as a doctor, I believed in vaccines. I thought that we'd made wonderful progress until I looked at the government's own statistics on the incidence of disease prior to the vaccines and then what's happened since then, and then we see what's happened to our children. 1 in 6 children, according to the CDC, has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. And, of course, this is a frightening thing. The incidence of juvenile diabetes has skyrocketed. The incidence of childhood asthma has skyrocketed. The incidence of childhood allergies has skyrocketed. And can we attribute that to the vaccines? Well, we know, of course, what the vaccines do is prime the immune system. Then they put alum in there, which is an aluminum product. And we know aluminum is toxic to the brain. Why are we putting a toxic substance into a substance for giving to our children? And then on top of that, up until recently, almost all of the childhood vaccines, except those with live vaccines, had thimerosal. 2,000 studies showing it was harmful, no studies showing that it was safe. I think there was one study put out by the drug companies that said it was safe, but then when the drug company pays for it, would you be surprised that it was a little bit slanted? Well, you need to get our material. You need to get the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, our 4-tape set on mercury, our 4-tape set on aspartame, and there are videos that go with both of those. And then, of course, we have 2 4-tape sets on fluoride and a DVD on fluoride. You need to get all of this information, and, of course, we'll be glad to send you free of charge a copy of my November newsletter. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Our December newsletter is Dr. William Hersey's testimony before the Senate back in the year 2000. Dr. William Hersey works in the Division of Drinking Water at the EPA. And, of course, they've been trying to tell the American people for years that they're poisoning us. But, amazingly enough, the American people never hear their message. I wonder why. That's the December newsletter. You can pull it down at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Read my December newsletter. Or, of course, we can send you a copy of one newsletter. Hopefully, of course, maybe you'd even want to take it regularly. Understand there truly is evil in the world. And, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.